listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I miss the days when basketball was a contact sport, when not every single player was complaining about not getting a foul called.
LAPD was called.
LAPD was called.
OMG, and I don't even say that. I am so tired of seeing rookies complain about not getting a call.
You cannot be serious.
I remember when only captains were allowed to speak to officials, and now everybody does it. Can you just shut up and play basketball?
Cause your mama raised you better than that.
Have you lost your mind?
Open. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
What? It's August 1st. So happy Thursday. Happy August. Yes, happy summer. We still have a long way to go, if the weather is any indication. Plus, the Summer Olympics remind us that there's still weeks to go in summer. Although, I gotta say, for those of you who live in the South or some Midwest and Southwest climes, not only do you have the heat, but you're also heading back to school soon. One family member is a third grade teacher, and she's been in her classroom already this week. And I know other friends of mine who are in the Atlanta, Georgia area, they're heading back to school soon. So yeah, it comes up pretty quickly for some parts of the country. But happy August and happy Olympics. It's been pretty amazing to watch each night if you're following primetime in Paris or if you're following live on some of the various networks like Peacock and USA. The ratings, the TV viewership has been great so far. Goodness, my mom even signed up for a month of Peacock so she could follow the Americans at the Olympics. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence online, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. We're glad to connect with you. But more than you, even, my apologies, we're thrilled to be able to connect with longtime news correspondent Steve Futterman, who joins us from Paris and the Olympics that are already going on this Thursday. Steve, how are you?
Ça va bien, Amy, et vous?
I'm good. And what I understand is that you can see me, but I just want you to know I can't see you. Sorry.
That's probably just as well. They have been very long nights here in Paris.
Oh, I can imagine. In fact, you sent me a text not that long ago, and I was wondering whether or not you've gotten any sleep. But judging by your social media, you have been all over the place. So I'd love to just hear initial impressions. How is Paris doing as a host site for the Olympics?
Well, I think they're doing very well. I mean, there are a few complaints you have here and there. It's the media complaining. No one likes to hear the media complain, but we would have liked the buses to get us closer to the swimming venue. But you know what? They have expenses they have to deal with. You know, there are budgets. They can't give us everything we want, but it's very good. The facilities, once you get there, are excellent. We have workrooms. We have it's very good. Very good. And the fans, I've heard no complaints. There were a few complaints about the opening ceremony by some of those who paid lots of money to be inside that sort of makeshift stadium. And initially, the opening ceremony for the first 2.5 hours was like a TV show with pouring rain. Not the most pleasant thing. But, you know, I mean, Mother Nature controls everything in the end. And, you know, if they could control the weather, it would be even better. But I think they're doing very, very well.
Now, I understand from, again, your social and the photos, which are amazing. You have been at the gymnastics venue. You've been at the swimming venue. I've seen some diving photos. I know you posted a photo in front of Roland Garros yesterday. So I'd love to know, just because the crowds have been so incredible, even through TV, where did you hear the loudest roars? Were they in the swimming venue for Léon Marchand, or were they for Team USA, the women's gymnastics gold medal?
No, I mean, last night at the arena, which is a rugby indoor arena that they've cut in half for swimming for Marchand, that was the loudest cheer I've heard. And they got to do it twice as he, you know, was like a double dose of Léon for the evening. He was just magnificent. That first race was a thrilling race, the 200-meter butterfly. Butterfly, for me, seems to bring out the best as far as excitement in races. To me, the greatest race I ever saw and actually called back then was the 100-meter butterfly in 2008, Michael Phelps, trying to keep that dream of 8 gold medals alive. And he had to come back in the final 15 meters to beat Michael Kovac. And he did. And for most of that race, it looked like he wouldn't do it. But he just found something in him that he beat him by 1/100th of a second. Can't be much closer than that. Mm-mm. There have been people who have said, well, he didn't touch the touch pad first. I mean, there's actually been controversy about it. But Phelps won. So the butterfly last night, I think Marchand picked up 7/10 of a second in the final 50 meters. He did not look like he was going to win, looked like a solid second, and then he touches first and the whole place went crazy. When the award ceremony came up, the gold medal ceremony, they sang the Marseillaise. It was pretty moving.
And I really love, too, how they time. Now, this is in the breaststroke, how they time their roars for when his head pops out of the water and he can hear them. I mean, that's pretty incredible the way that they have decided they're going to encourage him and essentially spur him to victory.
Yeah, I was wondering. That's interesting. Yeah, I noticed that, too. I didn't know if that came across on TV, but it does seem to be them doing that. Now, of course, you talk to most athletes, and I've not asked them specifically about that. You know, does he actually hear it? Is he so focused that, you know, he doesn't really necessarily hear it? It may be something the crowd's into. It may have some atmospheric aspect to it, but I wonder if he's actually inspired by it. You know, the crowd, when you come out there, you hear them roar and everything. That can inspire you, but when you're in the water, you're thinking of other things like my next stroke. And I'm wondering if he actually hears anything specific, or is it just a constant roar?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I know that he has been cognizant of the crowds. He's mentioned that. But I wonder if he hears them when he pops out. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Steve Futterman is with us from Paris. In fact, he's on a Zoom call, which is how we're connecting with him. I'm waving. He can see me, but I cannot see him because we don't have the camera set up the other way. But we're so excited to have him join us. It's just after 11 o'clock in the morning, Paris time. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. All right. So inside that gymnastics venue, it was a who's who. So many A-listers, Americans who wanted to be there to see Simone Biles and Team USA. What was it like to be inside the arena as they recapture gold?
Well, I mean, she is, doesn't mean she's going to be forever, but I can't see anyone taking her place in the foreseeable future. She is the GOAT. I mean, you know, at we go way back in the, you know, the new era of gymnastics. If you follow gymnastics, I think the turning point was a young Russian gymnast named Olga Korbut in 1972, when she began performing these, what at that time seemed ridiculous routines. And then Nadia came up 4 years later, and we've had a steady flow of these great gymnasts, but no one has done what Simone Biles has done. And if you look back at the history of gymnastics, it was mostly a young girl sport. I mean, Simone is, I think, 27 right now. That is a ridiculously, based on historic aspects, recent historic aspects, a ridiculously up in years age. Mm-hmm. Yet she is clearly the best. What I always enjoy is how the other gymnasts who have grown up admiring her, it's almost like when you used to see Kobe at the end of his career, the other players he was playing against, he was their idol growing up. And most of these gymnasts, they just idolize Simone Biles. So as she's competing against them and beating them quite easily, they are like in seventh heaven. They're loving it. Sure, they'd love to beat her. And, you know, eventually, probably if she continues to compete, you know, father time, mother time, the old cliche always wins out. But she shows no indication of losing much at all. I mean, she's still the best. She had some problem on the floor exercise the other night where she came off the mat. But at that point, the U.S. was really in good shape, and I don't know how focused she necessarily was.
It's interesting because she gets the, as you point out, the international support. But I'm wondering, in some of these venues, how much you can hear American fans. Is there an American presence?
Oh, my God, yes. Listen, you have people. I've not talked to them about their budgets, but these are people with, I think, disposable income. And they're fortunate. You know, I talked to people, you know, they went online. This was the first thing they were looking for. And I asked a young man from actually doesn't live far from me in LA. We started talking. He got online. He got a face value ticket. pretty good face value ticket too. So just to give you an idea what the inflated prices must be for face value, this level A ticket the other night for the team competition, just over $1,000. It's very expensive.
Wow.
It does shut most people out. I mean, right. In that sense, it's sad. But the Olympic movement has tried to make it available. You know, they do not want the Olympics just on pay-per-view or on something you have to pay for. So in most countries, and even in the U.S. on NBC, it's on traditional over-the-air television. So it is accessible to the large parts of the world.
Steve Futterman is with us from Paris. Excited to be able to connect with him on this Thursday morning, August 1st. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So you mentioned a 27-year-old goat in Simone Biles. Well, in swimming, we've got a 27-year-old goat in Katie Ledecky, now has a dozen medals, 8 of them gold. So along with a couple of other American women, she's just behind, well, not just behind, but they're second only to Michael Phelps in terms of number of swimming medals. And I love that your comparison that you put up on Twix was Secretariat and his lead in the 1973 Triple Crowns of the Belmont Stakes versus the way that she was almost lapping the field in the 1500 meters. That must have been incredible to see.
Yeah, and not a surprise. By the way, after the first 50 meters, she had a significant lead. This was the most, you know, as many of her 1500s have been, it was just a very one-sided race. I heard a Canadian swimmer who's now a commentator for CBC joking that she was on the podium with Katie in one of the 1500 meters races, and Katie had lapped her. She said that, not that it's embarrassing, but there's something strange, the optics that you're on the podium with Katie, yet Katie lapped her. She is just remarkable. This is her, you know, comfort zone, the 1500 meters. I asked her, and other people have asked her too. I asked her last night, I said, Los Angeles 4 years from now. And she, right now, she says, obviously things can change, but right now she does want to compete in LA. She'll be 31 in the 1500 meters. That is not necessarily a very advanced age. Someone reminded me that Dara Torres was 44 and won a silver. So of course, Katie Ledecky is going to be like a kid at 31. So I do think that's her goal right now. A lot has to do, you know, in all our lives, the things we have passion for. Do we continue to have that passion? I think she will. But that's, I think, the key thing more than anything else. Obviously, injuries can enter into it, but the key thing is passion. You have to have the passion to continue to train, continue to remain in shape. And I think she does have that passion for at least 4 more years.
I saw you ask her a question because I was watching the press conference, and said out loud, there's Steve. I see Steve.
Steve got a bit intimidated yesterday. We've had lots of, I'm not trying to say a massive amount, but there have been a significant number of COVID cases. And a friend of mine yesterday knew 3 people getting COVID. Nothing that I've heard that has been serious, but you know, if you can avoid it, mm-hmm. I sure would prefer to avoid it. So yesterday I finally got a bit scared, and fear is a great thing when you are dealing with medical issues.
Right.
It's good to be scared. So I actually put on my mask yesterday for the first time, and the swimming venue, there have been a couple swimmers who tested positive for COVID. And you know, the atmosphere in a swim stadium, lots of humidity,
right.
Heat, not the best thing for an illness that could be spreading around.
Well, I recognized your voice before I recognized your face. So, So then I saw you. How much did she talk, if at all? I know she has another race to come, but how much did she talk at all about legacy or her impact on the sport as a whole?
She talked a little bit. We were talking about, I think, mostly her legacy in the 1500 meters, how easy the race was. And of course, you know, any responsible athlete never likes to say it was easy, but it really was. I found it very interesting how she plays games in her mind. Like she'll look at the thing and, well, now there's 6 laps to go, 5 laps to go. She sometimes thinks about a family member or a friend for a particular lap. Like she did not say this, but I'm wondering if lap X is for mom, XY is for brother. X. You know, she may do that. She does say that she's been playing tricks in her mind for years to get her through. I mean, it's a 30-minute race. You have to really, come up with ways to keep yourself inspired and going. Yeah. And but She has no problem, obviously. 10-second win. I mean, that's almost like, a 10-second lead in swimming. I cannot tell you how big a lead that is.
Yeah, incredible. And right, she did mention, I heard her talk about having to push through the pain and even getting a cramp at the same point in this race almost every time. And just, you know what's coming and you have to push through it. You also went to see tennis, and we've had some incredibly dramatic storylines and results come out of tennis. Well, what did you think of Roland Garros?
I'd never been to Roland Garros before. I've actually only been to one Grand Slam event, and that's Wimbledon, which to me is like, of course, I can't compare it to the U.S. Open and the Australia Open because I've never been there. But to me, Wimbledon symbolizes, you know, the mecca of tennis. So this was my first time at Roland Garros. I'd never seen clay court competition. It was quite interesting. The venue, you know, you have these optic images in your mind based on the pictures you've seen on TV. Roland Garros is a much more, for some reason, I thought it was a much more quaint venue. It's not quaint at all. It's lavish. It's beautiful. And I went there for the Djokovic match against Nadal. We all feel that that's probably no guarantee the last time they'll ever meet. I think that was their 60th meeting. And of course, many people also feel that that could be the last singles match for Rafa Nadal. And, you know, for the first 8/10 of the event, it went like we expected. It was 6-love first set, 4-love second set, 2 games to go. And I don't know what suddenly happened, but Rafa Nadal suddenly went back in time. Had 4 great games, actually tied the match at 4-4. The crowd was going crazy. They would have given anything for a third set. I said to myself, is this possible? I mean, no way he can force a set. And in the end, he didn't. Djokovic won the final 2 games. But it was fun to see one great last moment for Rafa Nadal, if that was the final singles match.
Steve, before I let you go, you've been doing this a long time yourself. Your first Olympics, as you posted online, was in L.A. in 1984. Maybe we'll ask you the same question that Katie Ledecky is getting. Will you still be working in 4 years when the Olympics are back in L.A.?
If they will let me, I have no, I'm not going to get tired of it. It's out of my hands. If I'm working, I'm going to be there. I want to be there very much. I'm even looking towards possibly Brisbane in 2032, but Los Angeles, I think, would be great to have sort of a, like, bookends, you know, your first Summer Olympics and possibly last Summer Olympics. But I enjoy the Olympics. What a privilege for me to see all these records. I mean, my first Olympics was the great Carl Lewis Olympics.
Yes.
With winning the 4 gold medals, matching the Jesse Owens feat, Zola Budd and Mary Decker crashing on the track at the Coliseum, Mary Lou Retton. I mean, these are the events that were big at my first Olympics. It's just been a wonderful ride. Lucky for me. I mean, pretty darn lucky for me to be able to do all these Olympics. And I still enjoy it. I think it's, you know, it's the one event. The World Cup as well, but that's sort of a one-day event, even though it goes over a month, but it's that World Cup final. But this, for 2 weeks, just brings together the athletes. And I do like, you know, it doesn't always work this way, but sometimes you do see the politics take a back seat. You'll see athletes from countries that obviously have great political differences, have some understanding between the two. Again, doesn't happen always, but it's nice when you see that. But generally, there's lots of camaraderie. And one thing I wanted to mention, I noticed last night, you see it all the time, but when you win, I noticed this in the 100-meter freestyle for the women last night, the joy of winning third or second, you got a medal. Sometimes you would think, and you know, maybe Michael Phelps would not be happy with a a non-gold medal, but in general, these athletes, when they win obviously a gold, but if they win a silver and a bronze, they are elated. And they should be. I mean, second or third in the world, not too bad.
And we still have so much to come, like track and field takes over week number 2. By the way, Steve,
Noah Lyles, watch out for him. He wants to win both. He wants to start being in the discussion as one of the greatest sprinters ever. We'll see him. He's the one I'm really looking out for. Obviously, there are lots of others, but I really want to see what he does.
Yeah. By the way, Steve, looking at your photo from 1984, my favorite part is the landline, the cord phone that you're talking on and delivering your reports.
It looks like I'm actually on a cell phone, except there's a cord there. If you look at that picture, it's a sideways view.
Yep.
If I was on a cell phone today, I would sort of look the same way, except there's a cord there. It's a regular phone, but it almost has the same optics as a smartphone these days. So
you can find Steve on Twix at S Futterman, F-U-T-T-E-R-M-A-N, longtime news correspondent. He is always at the biggest events and tons of great photos from inside the venues as he's sharing his personal perspective. It's so good to connect with you. Thank you for your patience this week. It's awesome to have you from Paris, Steve.
Oh, yeah. Great to talk with you, Amy. So glad we talked.
Yes, for sure. Have fun. From Zoom call to Paris. That's pretty awesome. I have to thank Manny and Pete and Cap, different members of our staff here at the Infinity Sports Network for making that happen because Steve couldn't use a phone, so we needed to connect with him on Zoom, and I'm thrilled that it finally worked out. Hope that you enjoyed that as well. All right, we've got a little more baseball and football to squeeze in, but here's the question of the night. In light of my jealousy, my envy over Katie Ledecky, and it's not because of her gold medals, though I'm sure that'd be amazing, but it's because she can eat whatever she wants. She burns so many calories per day. She can eat dessert. She can eat chocolate every day if she wants to. And I would be. Maybe she doesn't because she's much more self-disciplined. Anyway, we're asking you online at A-Law Radio as well as on our Facebook page, what treat would you indulge in every day if you burned as many calories as Katie Ledecky? Good morning to you. Happy Thursday. Happy August. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Tim Boyle has them set. Breece Hall to his right. First and goal at the one. He takes the snap, drops back to throw. Lobs it back right corner of the end zone. Sliding catch made by Garrett Wilson. That's a Jet touchdown.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
Bob Wischusen, play-by-play voice of the New York Jets. Ooh, that gets my juices flowing a little bit, especially when it's August and tonight is the Hall of Fame game. I'm not joking. We will not see any of the Bears who will be starting. Instead, it'll be twos and threes, maybe even deeper than that on the depth chart, but we will not see Caleb Williams. We will not see any of the Bears starters. So don't get too excited, though it will sound like football for a short time. Anyway, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers is kind of funny. I want to tell you about the exchange that Manny and I just had before we came back from the commercial break. I had planned on talking about this Aaron Rodgers-Garrett Wilson dynamic because it was all the rage on Wednesday. And I said to, well, Manny asked me, would you like any type of sound, any type of audio coming back? And I said, an Aaron Rodgers touchdown. Oh, wait, never mind. He didn't have one with the Jets. Get me a Garrett Wilson touchdown, stat. And that's what you hear. But did you recognize the name of the QB, Tim Boyle? Those were the days. Those were the days. Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers, at least for now. Let's hope it lasts longer than four snaps into the 2024 season. And Garrett Wilson, who will be going into year three of his NFL career. The two of them have had some fairly animated, intense, fiery conversations over the past week. Happen during the weekend, happen again on Tuesday.
Bums.
I'm sure that's not what they were saying. Where the quarterback and his young wideout were having a strongly worded conversation. When people talk about benches clearing in baseball, and you know they want to use the word brawl, but it's not. It's a benches clearing conversation. That's what most of them are. This is a strongly worded conversation after plays where they were unable to connect. So Aaron Rodgers, as the elder statesman, stop it. As the elder statesman, he, and we know this from his time with the Packers, he is not shy in pointing out that younger dudes need to get their acts together, that younger dudes need to know the offense, follow their quarterback's lead, all that jazz. And like I said, he did it with Green Bay, and he'll do it with Garrett Wilson.
This offense is about spacing, timing, and rhythm. And, you know, we need him first and foremost to get those little details down. But there's so many other things. Like you see in the red zone, there's a lot of freedom for him to run his route based on whatever steps he feels in the open, easiest.
So, yeah, there's a lot for him to learn. But more than that, think about the number of quarterbacks that have thrown Garrett Wilson the ball since he got to the Jets. I mean, just think about that for a second, okay? So Aaron Rodgers, what did he play? A couple series or a couple of, I don't even remember how many it was in the first week of the preseason. No, not the regular season. But played a couple of series first week of the preseason. Really didn't absorb a ton of time, but obviously was limited, right? He lasted, as we pointed out, not even one full series with the Jets last year. Meanwhile, Garrett Wilson has had to catch passes from, what is it, a half dozen different Jets quarterbacks since he was a rookie?
Tim Boyle and Zach Wilson. Those are two right there right off the bat.
Well, and they're not the only ones. I mean, Mike White, he would have been there his rookie season, right? Because last year he went to the Dolphins. And so there's three quarterbacks right there. Plus, in the preseason and training camp, he caught passes from Aaron Rodgers. So I understand that there is a need for attention to detail, and that the idea with playing alongside a Hall of Fame quarterback is that they're going to bring out the absolute best in you. And as a young receiver, it's your job to get on the same page with your QB. I get all of that. But maybe, just maybe, cut him a little bit of slack, because I just looked it up. You ready? He's caught passes from Zach Wilson, Mike White. We mentioned those two. Tim Boyle, there's three. Aaron Rodgers and Joe Flacco. Okay, so would you like me to throw in one more? Last year, Trevor Siemian. Remember, Trevor was brought in midseason, and he also started three games.
Yeah, he was going to save the Jets season.
So this is what Garrett Wilson has been dealing with. Again, I'm saying Aaron Rodgers is going to raise the level of play, like, theoretically, if he can stay healthy, like a Patrick Mahomes or a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning. These are Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and his attention to detail will make Garrett Wilson better. But the fact is, he's had a revolving door of QBs throwing him the ball since he got to New York, and so I kind of feel like, at that point, maybe cut him a little slack while he adjusts.
He's vocalizing, he's pissed off. I know when we're getting our ass beat, I'm pissed off. You know, I may not vocalize it that way to the guys, but I'm pissed off too. So it's kind of a mutual feeling. It's like, I'm glad he said something.
Well, good. I'm glad he's taking it the right way, because this is the time when you need to get on the same page. Remember the brouhaha last year, and it'll probably happen again, over Brock Purdy throwing interceptions in training camp and in preseason. And what Kyle Shanahan said is that, you know, we want him to throw interceptions. That means he's working stuff out. He's trying things. He's being aggressive. So, yeah, there are going to be mistakes. There are going to be routes that break one way when the quarterback thinks you're going to break a different way and you're not on the same page. And I appreciate that a young receiver in Garrett Wilson not only wants to get better. Can you imagine how relieved he is not to have Zach Wilson throwing him the ball? Thanks, Denver. But he is interested in getting better so that they can win. I mean, they've been waiting for Aaron Rodgers to be their starting quarterback.
It's not personal. I don't think anyone in this building takes it that way. It's like, all right, this is our leader right here. Obviously, he's not happy with what we're doing. So it can be a reminder for some of the guys.
Oh, cut him off there. But you get the gist of what he's saying. By the way, Robert Saleh has indicated that Aaron Rodgers isn't going to play in the first preseason game when they get there. It's not this weekend. And they're not really sure what they're going to do with him in the preseason.
That's Robert's decision. I've never told him I don't want to play in the preseason. There's a lot of thoughts about whether there's any particular gain from it.
Or value from it, right? I'll tell you what would not be valuable is if he got hurt. Now, I think that's a weak excuse for holding a guy out, because the risk is there every time he steps on the field in practice, even with a red jersey. The risk is there in preseason. It's obviously happening to other franchises where they're losing guys to ACLs, to Achilles, broken bones. So it's a job hazard. There's no way to avoid it. But if you can keep your quarterback from getting hit before the regular season, maybe you increase the odds that he will still be healthy and you'll be able to use him beyond week one. I know that the Jets have got to be on edge because of what happened last year. He's a 40-year-old QB, but also because their entire system is built around Aaron. And they did it last year and then had to wait for him a full year and essentially got a pass from the front office. Okay, yes, we're going to wait one more year for Aaron Rodgers. And I can understand, again, why they're tense over his health and whether or not he's going to get injured. Now, you ask Aaron, at 40, he can still chuck the ball. He's still durable. But, yeah, he also had to sit out a full year, which is not something he's done before.
Once I was able to kind of get present in my body and start to look around, there's always little miracles around you. If you just get the hell out of your own way, you can see some of those things.
Good. I like the attitude. So let's see a miracle past snap four.
Bums.
Of the NFL season. As much as I'm not a Jets fan and this has nothing to do with the team he was playing for, I will say that when Aaron Rodgers is playing football, the NFL's more interesting. I mean, it's a better level of play when he's on the field. So yeah, it's still one of those storylines that forever I will keep in the category of you can't make this stuff up. Four snaps. Anything beyond that this year is an improvement. And I'm not being snarky, I'm being serious. It was such a downer for the Jets and for the NFL. And so I'm really hoping we get a healthy Aaron Rodgers this season. This portion of the show brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam and just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Marco Belletti.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Just happy with the time, just happy with how it felt, and really, you know, any gold medal is, it's not easy to win, so just, I'm just trying to appreciate the moment, and I mean, I don't mean to celebrate that much, but it comes out, you know, just the happiness and the joy, it just comes out.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
Well, that was actually Katie Ledecky, but I'm happy to be talking about Katie on this Thursday morning, first day of August. The Olympics cruising through a Thursday already. Got the men's 50-meter freestyle going on, the heats and the semifinals. Man, talk about a sprint. It's on all-out blast. And so there's a chance for more American medals, of course, as the swimming will wrap up in the next few days. But what I didn't realize until last night when I was watching the coverage from Paris is that the U.S. only had two gold medals in the pool until Katie Ledecky. And she blew away the field, 10-second margin of victory. And it wasn't close. After 100 meters, she was already so far out in front that it would have taken some type of miracle or an injury to her, which thankfully did not happen. She is awesome. And it dawned on me that I'm jealous. She gets to eat chocolate every day if she wants to, burning that many calories. Now, she probably is far more self-controlled than I would be about the chocolate, but it's the catalyst for our question. If you could indulge in a treat every day because you were burning as many calories as Katie Ledecky, which treats would it be? And you guys are all into it. I feel as though you're my people right now. Online, A-Law Radio, and then our Facebook page too. Lots of great examples. I'm reading through them. So if you haven't heard yours, well, you can go back and you can check out the thread. This one comes from Legstrom. P Pizza is my go-to. I need the carbs anyway. All right. Rob says bring on the pizzas, but no excuse about how he burns that many calories. Paul says my mom's carne guisada tacos. Pretty sure that earlier what we heard from Manny was...
tacos al pastor.
That's right. So he would be indulging in those along with the very thick tortillas every single day.
Make me thick.
Martin on Twix, peanut butter parfait. Well, it's a big one. It's got chocolate, vanilla ice cream, peanuts. Stop it. And then I'm pretty sure this is a joke, but WJ goes with raw broccoli. Well, are you putting hot fudge on your raw broccoli? Are you putting cheesy sauce on your raw broccoli? What are you dipping that raw broccoli into? Is it a chocolate fondue fountain? If that's the case, then raw broccoli can always be dangerous. It depends on what you're putting in it. So I like that your attempt to be clever, but I still say you could put all caramel, hot fudge, whipped cream. This is bad. I'm going to the grocery store as soon as I get off the air, so this is not helpful at all. But in my service to you, our listeners, and those of you who are finding us online to answer this question, I feel as though I must share your answers. We've got some more here. Going to our Facebook page. This is amazing. Mike says the cheesy gordita crunch from Taco Bell. of all the things that he could eat, he would eat something from Taco Bell?
I understand. I'm a big fan of the cheesy gordita crunch as well.
I just heard this report on the Bloomberg Business Minute. I listened to it on one of our local New York stations, actually, All in the Family, a CBS news station. And what McDonald's has indicated, so they're starting to come underneath their projections per quarter, so sales projections, and they actually don't believe that they're going to be able to boost those numbers again. So now they're either having to cut prices or they're having to lower projections because the entire fast food industry is taking a hit. People are buying less and less fast food. It's not just McDonald's. It's all of the fast food outlets are seeing a decline in sales and in profits.
Woo, go America.
Yeah, how about that? Now, I don't know if it's because the economy sucks so badly or if it's because people are choosing to eat healthier. But it's not like they're cheap. I mean, fast food used to be a cheaper option too. It is not anymore.
No dollar menu
on
that.
Holy cow. Yeah, it's expensive. Okay, going on. That's a Taco Bell answer. Kim on Facebook, white chocolate Reese's cups. Ooh, I've never had one of those. Trent is going Coca-Cola, baby. Just 37 grams of sugar in a can. Let's go. Yeah. Eric, vanilla bean ice cream and frosted flakes. Together, do you think? Like
yes.
Frosted flakes on top of his ice cream.
I would absolutely try that out.
John, I already said chocolate would be my thing, but if I could eat an ice cream with a cereal topping, it would have to be Apple Jacks. Oh, that would be so good. Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
These are all cereals that I wasn't allowed to have in my house.
Right. In my house when I was growing up, we had to mix our Apple Jacks with Cheerios. We were not allowed to have straight Apple Jacks.
Honey Nut Cheerios or Honey Bunches of Oats. That's what you got, kids. No sugar.
Those have sugar. Moving on, John goes with German chocolate cake. Bill decides he's going to be a know-it-all. I eat cake every day. Okay.
All right, Bill.
No, seriously. Norm goes with peanut butter pie. Peanut butter pie. Brent has a list. He's going to go with s'mores from the backyard fire pit. Maybe giant oatmeal cream pies. Those have a shelf life of 2 years. Maybe a big slice of a breakfast cheese Danish.
I like the cream pie. I like the oatmeal cream pies.
Robert is going with spaghetti, garlic, and oil. So spaghetti, but with garlic and oil.
What was the name?
Robert. Yeah. Cher goes with banana pudding or chocolate cake. Mark.
Ooh, banana bread.
Yeah, Mark. Not my thing. I'm not a big fan of banana in baked goods. I'm not even a big fan of banana splits either. I feel like it ruins it. Mark goes with cheesecake and all the different flavors. George, Ben and Jerry's ice cream. Paul, ice cream, a different flavor or a different way of eating it every day. So he's reserving the right to get outside. Color outside the lines, get outside the beaten path. Larry goes with vanilla milkshake.
Yes.
Dawn, Krispy Kreme donuts. James, a man after my own heart, chocolate chip ice cream. Peter wants me to know it's a great question. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is, Petey.
No, he's got an entire menu. A small filet mignon, followed by equal portions of pumpkin and coconut cream pie every day.
Big fan of pumpkin pie.
Now, here's one that is kind of confusing to me. A different James. I would want to have an omelet every morning. Dude, eggs are good for you. They're protein. They're terrific. Have at it. Put veggies in your omelet. Put bacon in your omelet. Right? This is all stuff that I feel like we should be encouraging. Eggs are great protein. So continue to daydream as I head to the grocery store. And here's the thing. It's you were not with me last week, Manny. This is week number two of pulling the wool over Walmart's eyes. So recently they changed all the checkout lines, the self-checkout lines, I'm sorry, to 15 items or fewer. At 6:30 in the morning, there's nobody there. But they will not let me take more than 15 items. So, I had to go through a line with an actual checker, an employee. It was a disaster. I couldn't pack my bags fast enough. I got very flustered. She just sat there and stared at me. 10 minutes to pack all my bags. I had about 45 items. So I said, never again. My new goal, to completely outfox them. So last week, I had 31 items. I kind of cheated. I went through the first time in the store and got all the dry goods, the toiletries, the cat food, the dog food, 15 items. Went through the self-checkout line, put it in my car, got my cart back into the store, got the dairy and the fresh fruit and the fresh veggies, and went back through again. Nobody noticed. I might get arrested, but I'm going to do it anyway as many times as it takes. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom! Boom!